Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking The Nice Guys.
Aaron, you're the nicest of nice guys.
And certainly finished last.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe! Konnichiwa!
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 240, 240.
We're getting pretty close to 250 here.
We are. We got to start... Now we're like in that like 10-episode...
Countdown. We got to think about something cool. Yeah.
250. That's, you know... That'll be a good one. I have a feeling. I know these things.
Yeah.
But yeah. 240 is our episode of the week, and our movie of the week that we're discussing is The Nice Guys, the latest film from writer-director Shane Black, starring Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling.
Is that how they go now?
Yeah, right. They're extra R's. Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling.
Double R's.
Just do the late Don Pardo. Russell Crowe. Ryan Gosling.
R.I.P. SNL.
Joining us today to discuss The Nice Guys, we have from Zachy's Corner, the movie film podcast and the Nostalgia Theater podcast. He's starting his own PI firm. It's Zachy Hassan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Glad to have you back.
Yeah.
Likewise. How are you doing?
I'm didn't realize around. That you're starting your own PI firm.
I think it's time.
Okay.
We'll get back to that in a question I have coming up. But for now, let's do some let's do some show notes here. First up, a new commentary track is up. Abe, you were even on this one this time.
X3.
Yeah, we did X3, The Last Stand, the much acclaimed, not controversial whatsoever X-Men movie that everyone loves the most. Not true. But yes, Jim, Scott, and Brandon, commentary regulars, were all on to discuss the third X-Men film directed by Brett Ratner with us, and we had quite a fun time with it because there's a lot of stuff to talk about with that movie.
A whole ton. Yeah. Not only that, but... there's also a whole lot of costume talk in this movie as well.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Well, there'll be costume talk in next week's show, too. We finally discuss X-Men: Apocalypse.
But Can't wait.
We'll get there. What else? iTunes reviews and ratings. Good to get those. Helps out the show. Helps out people find the show. If you want to log into iTunes, search out N. You can just search that and it'll fill in the blank for you because that's how popular our show is already. You don't even have to fill in all those other extra extraneous words. You can just write out and it'll just be like, here, is this what you're looking for? Take it.
Listeners are probably asking, why did you guys make your title so long? Eh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
But hey, we've made it to the out and...
yeah. Soon we'll just have to, you know, type the letter O and they'll be like, do you want the Out Now podcast with Aaron and Abe? Like, it'll the computer will reach out and grab you.
Either
like, is this what you want?
Either that or they're going to be looking for Oreos.
It'll be like Lawnmower Man. It'll be like Joe reaches through
Lawnmower
and like grabs you. He's like, is this what you want? The Out Now Verity podcast?
That's a deep cut.
Yeah, that's what I went for.
Those graphics are great.
Yeah, well, beyond cyberspace, right? That's another deep cut. So if you want to log on to iTunes and search our show, if you find it, you can give us a star rating. That'd be great. If you want to write a few words and tie them together and form some kind of sentence that makes up a review, that's a very complicated way of saying that. That you can do also. That'd be great.
And then you can also write anything else to us. Mathematical formulas, terms and conditions, emojis.
Yeah, I think that's the new one we're waiting for. Terms and conditions copied and pasted into an iTunes review for us.
You know who would love that? Tim Cook. Be like, this is great. Thank you for spreading our terms and conditions around.
Yes, but it'd be great to, you know, help more people find the show and pop us up in the old iTunes charts or what have you.
Yeah.
Abe.
Yes.
Last week we had a question about the use of the word fun.
Yes, we did. We actually been talking about it for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, but the use of the word fun, like it's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And I have an example of this. I was at Best Buy the other day.
Okay.
Pick up the witch.
That's similar to Circuit City, right?
Yeah, but we don't talk about stores that don't exist anymore, Abe.
But All right.
I was picking up The Witch on Blu-ray, and the guy, the nearest best boy. There was a best boy there. He was making a movie. It was great. There was a griff, and a gaffer. It was great. A grip. But no, the best buy guy was like standing around. He's like, "You need any help with anything?" "No, I'm good." I said, and I pick up The Witch, and he's like, "Hey, a lot of people have been picking that one up. Is that good?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's good. It's really dark and whatnot." And he's like, "Oh, cool. Sounds fun." And so I could have just walked away. Okay, but
McFly, when people call him chicken, you could just walk away.
It timed in where I'm like, well, fun's not, like, I need to get into this guy. Fun's not quite the word that I would use necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I try to describe it. It's like, yeah, well, I know I'm not using the word fun like that either. I'm just like, it was like a default. It's like, and that's what I've tried to explain it as in the past. You use fun sometimes kind of a descriptor, but not necessarily like the most accurate one, just kind of a shorthand.
Yeah.
It's like, yep, I know all about them. My wife's a linguistics professor. I'm like, well, see, you definitely know then.
Now he knows, yeah. The go-to that I always use, interesting. That always gets me out of every conversation. Sounds okay. Interesting. at the grocery store, waiting in line? No, sounds interesting, yeah. Try it out.
All right. So yes, we can continue our use of words to describe movies in this debate.
I'm sure that's what people have tuned into the show for, right?
That and hearing the colons between subtitles of movies.
This is true.
Yeah. All right, that's show notes stuff. Let's move on now. Let's get to know everybody. Each week we ask each other a question or two, try to set the tone for the podcast. We better get to
know everybody.
Abe, why don't you start this one off?
All right. If you guys were driving around in 1970s Los Angeles, what kind of car would you have?
What's the thing that Nick Cage is trying to steal in a...
Shelby Cobra 1960-something.
I was going to say a National Treasure Book of Secrets.
Oh, National Treasure? I'm kidding. I thought you were talking about Gone in 60 Seconds.
I was kidding. About Gone in 60 Seconds. I don't know. Zach, you got a thing? I can draw a good one.
DeLorean?
That's an 80s car.
Yeah, I was like...
I would be driving a 1972 Cutlass Supreme from Oldsmobile.
Okay.
He knows the make and model and the year.
That was my car growing up. That was my family's car. So
oh, nice.
I am not a car guy, so I'm gonna say whatever whatever Gene Hackman was tearing around town in French Connection, I'll go with that one.
That works as well.
It's not even like a fancy car. It's just whatever he was, just so I can make faces while frantically steering the steering wheel, going rah, just doing that.
No, I asked because they've got specifically a Camaro Z28 in here, and then Ryan Gosling is driving around in his Mercedes convertible SL, and I was like, oh, that Shane Black is really going with these nice classic cars here. Camaro, debatable. I'm not huge on American Muscle, but
it's a very stylish film as far as what we see in it to represent the 70s period. I was especially taking notice of when they're all like sunset at one point, and they drive past both an Airport 77 poster and a Jaws 2 poster at the same time.
We'll get to more of the nuance later.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
What would be the name of your detective agency? I already know Abe's.
Snoping around.
Okay.
Well, what would you think mine is?
Mua Cases, Mua Problems.
I have a photo of like Biggie Smalls and me photoshopped together.
I thought of that as I was saying, I know what yours is already, by the way.
Get on you.
just picture the flyer. Imagine you look a lot like your Skype profile picture, actually, like, with words under it.
See, I would want to work with somebody else with the last name Hassan, just so we could be Hassan and Hassan.
Mm-hmm. Just like that's... Simon and Simon.
Exactly. But yeah, it would not like be
Simon,
my brother.
Simon, yes.
Is somebody going to have a mustache and the other one's going to be clean shaven?
Yeah, well, you kind of have to, right? That's like the PI code.
Yeah, you can't exactly. Can't just be doing it all over the place, all willy-nilly.
Well, did Magnum and... the guy who hires him, they both had mustaches. I forget his name.
Yeah, but okay, Tom Selleck's in like a different, like,
he's in a different league.
The mustaches. So there.
All right.
Right, Tom? You're right. Okay, good. Okay.
Tom Selleck is on the show?
He hangs out sometimes.
Yeah, he's shooting
when
Blue Bloods.
He's not Blue Bloods. Right. He's over here.
CBS's Blue Bloods.
Is that still on?
I don't think so.
No,
it is.
Right? No, you can't assume it's off. If it's CBS, you assume it's still on. It's like its 14th season.
I'm surprised. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. Not to tangent too much, but CBS has all their shows they're running. Everybody has canceled on Fox, NBC, and ABC. It's been crazy this week. This May.
Blue
still
Bloods has been on for 6 seasons. So for CBS, that's like a third of its lifespan.
Yes,
it's a third.
Yeah.
How long is it? How much, your brother?
That was like 9 seasons.
I'm sorry. No, the other one.
Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang Theory has been on since the Big Bang.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
It is.
All right.
All right. That's how you play.
Hello, everybody.
All right. Moving on. Let's get out now. Quickies.
Tim.
Each week now we have a movie to talk about. Quickies.
Tim, I'll give it to you this time.
Thank you.
All right.
Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
I did. I saw a couple, but I'll talk about Angry Birds. Angry Birds is not very good.
No.
And I would say that it's probably because the characters are kind of unlikable, and there's never really any clear delineation as to why they're so unlikable, besides maybe being referenced to a couple times in which he was picked on in school, or referenced one time in which he was an orphan. But
which ones are unlikable? Like I agree, it's not a good.
Red is unlikable. The pigs are unlikable.
Well, the pigs are villains.
I started to warm up to Josh Gad a lot, who is the yellow bird. And then Dan McBride has really, he's not very unlikable, but he's likable, but there's not a whole lot to him. So that's the other thing, is the movie's just not very.
Well, they're not very angry. That was my kind of takeaway. Like, even Jason Sudeikis is Red. He's just kind of like, he's put upon. But he's not
he's
really
like... He's like Grumpy Bird.
He's Grumpy Bird, yeah.
He is, all the time, again, for no real reason. And they get into a mess that gets the movie going, but that they sort of resolve it in such an easy way that...
By playing Angry Birds?
Yeah. And, you know, they go through all this destruction that they cohesively come together too easily. But the kids in the theater loved it, so can you blame them? Not really. Not, you can't blame the kids. You gotta
yes,
blame
I can.
The
I can.
Creators.
Don't tell me who not to blame. I can blame kids all I want.
I'm not gonna blame the 5-year-old that was sitting next to me for laughing.
But... Yeah, but I'm not blaming kids. Yes, I am. But it's colorful and they talk funny isn't like an excuse for me to be like, well, kids like that, because there's other movies where they're colorful and they talk funny that are good.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, I mean, again, in terms of cleverness, this movie is not very clever. And you think of a movie or a book that was 12 pages long that they made into a movie, Cloud with a Chance of Meatballs, mm-hmm. and that one, I was blown away by how funny that was. Yep. I was actually half expecting them to do another Columbia Pictures joke, just like they did in Cloud with a Chance of Meatballs, because it's also Sony that did it. And no Columbia Pictures joke, but. There's also no sense of geography. It's not very clever, and it's just overall not very funny. I was actually really drawn out of it after the first like 5 minutes of the movie. I kind of just wanted to leave, but no, man, I stuck it out for you, the fans.
After the first 5 minutes, after the great Hannibal Buress played Angry Parent,
that scene was kind of made no sense to me.
Hannibal Buress is in all three new releases this week, guys. By the way, if you didn't realize that.
Is he a Nice Guys?
Yes, he's the voice of the bumblebee.
All right.
He's in all three new movies this week, which
you got me.
I was like, Hannibal Rose popped up again.
So, Angry Birds, kind of just wait for TV.
What was the other thing you saw?
Dark Horse, the documentary Dark Horse, about the town in England that came together and bought this horse and essentially started racing for them and won them a few bucks. It's an alright movie. It's an alright documentary. I think that they focus too much on a lot of separate things, such as classism versus the town versus the horse versus the feelings you get when, you know, the feelings of jubilation and glee when horses win and whatever else. But they don't really tie together all too well. But it's alright.
Who plays the horse? I'm kidding.
Danny McBride.
Okay, great. That's Dark Horse?
Yeah, Dark That's Horse.
Is that on Netflix, I assume?
No, it's like in like super small niche theaters. I don't even know if it's out anymore.
So it's like a new release.
Yeah, yeah.
Why'd you see it?
I was curious about it. I saw the trailer like maybe a couple months ago, and I was like, oh, this looks like an interesting documentary, and so I wanted to seek it out.
Good on you, seeking out documentaries. I support it.
Thanks.
Zachy, any new movies you've seen?
So I saw Angry Birds also, and I actually had a great experience. It was a blast for me because it was the best like 45-minute nap I've had in forever. I conked right out, and I woke up as the credits were rolling. So for me, I love that experience. I can't tell you a thing about the movie, but that nap, let's tell you.
How many of your kids did enjoy it?
So I took two of my kids, and I'm assuming they enjoyed it because they sat through it and they didn't wake me up. So
two out of two little Hassans approved then.
Yeah, exactly. They liked it, but they're kids. What do they know?
Same argument that I had.
Some yeah, exactly. have better taste.
I tell them that to their face. I'm like, you're a kid. What do you know?
I was a child when I saw Hook.
And then
I didn't
laugh
like Hook then.
You were
not
wise
wrong.
In your years.
And then I also saw a movie called Me Before You, which is coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah. Oh.
And this is a romance starring Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones and Sam Claflin. And she plays a young lady she's asked to be a caretaker for this guy who's quadriplegic. And she falls in love with him and hilarity ensues.
Not really what happens.
Not hilarity.
I've seen the trailer and I was like, that'd be great if hilarity.
Are they both English in the movie or are they using American accents?
They are both English, yeah.
Okay.
And
that was my biggest curiosity.
They're both very good. The movie is, I am absolutely not the audience for this movie. I can see it doing very well, but I can't say I would necessarily recommend it.
Who's the older actor that they get to add a little bit more credence to the film?
Charles Dance
there
is in there.
Go.
Yeah.
Also
yeah.
playing English, I hope.
Yeah, he She's yep. you know, honestly
he doesn't wear his glass eye from Last Action Hero.
She's actually terrific. I interviewed her about the film about a week ago and she's just so much enthusiasm, so much energy. I mean, it's really like just really sweet, you know? Like, I mean, you do a lot of these junket interviews and it's nice to meet somebody who just is just so excited just to be there, you know?
Well, I think she probably just got the news that Terminator Genesis 2 wasn't happening, so it probably made her extra happy.
and that's why she was so ecstatic, yeah.
All right.
What would you recommend Me Before You?
You know, it's like a good Netflix movie, I would say. I wouldn't necessarily say to run out and watch it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've seen a few things this week, and first I'll go with Neighbors 2, Sorority Row.
Wait, is that... I thought it was Sorority Rising.
Sorority Rising. What did I say? Sorority Rising. Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. I was a big fan of the first Neighbors. I really like that film for being just both it was like what could have been just a simple broad comedy turned into this movie about like responsibility and becoming an adult.
Right.
And it was really well done, as well as having Rose Byrne in there, not just as like the wife, but as a comedic player that's just as valuable as Zac Efron and Seth Rogen in that film.
Using her Australian accent.
Yeah, letting her be her natural accent, presumably so she can improv better with the other guys without having to like think about doing it in an accent. This movie, I think, is even better than the first Neighbors.
Might be
splitting hairs a bit because it's like they're both just really funny. But in addition to being basically about the same thing where we have Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne as parents who are trying to, you know, just being regular parents in the midst of this kind of housing battle. It has like all the same kind of stuff that you got in that first Neighbors film, but it adds on the idea of female empowerment of all things, where it's a movie that doesn't use the sorority aspect to kind of play it lowbrow or play it like a frat comedy. It makes fun of what frats do and the double standards that they present in various college type movies. And it's really encouraging. It's probably like the best. It's probably the best like wide release female empowerment movie since Mad Max Fury Road last year.
Wow,
that's high praise.
And it was like very surprising to like not just find like another broad comedy that like uses good comedic talent well enough, but like one that like has things it's going for. It's not the most like, I don't know, nuanced way of approaching that kind of subject matter, but it tries a lot harder than it would you would think it has any right to.
Yeah.
And
well, it's written by. Is it written by Seth Gold or Seth and Evan?
It's Seth and Evan and Nick Stoller, the director, and the two guys that wrote the first film as well. Like they've all combined forces to make the scene.
Five people wrote this movie?
Yeah.
Oh wow! All right.
But in addition to kind of having like good social commentary going on, it is very funny. It's also faster paced. It's leaner than the first film, where I think the first Neighbors. I can see points where it does kind of slow down a bit. This one rarely stops. If anything, it could use some breathing room. It flies by pretty quickly. But it does all that while just being really funny and just having good things to kind of go for.
Is Dave Franco and Christopher Mintz-Plasse in the movie?
All of the original cast make a...
They are? Okay.
Yeah, they make some small appearances.
Because from the trailers, it seems like they're not.
They are. They're in reduced roles for obvious reasons. But the things that they have... Dave Franco go through in particular, there's just really really good interesting stuff there that never it's never mocking in what it's trying to do. It's well worth it. It's a shame it didn't do like I know the box office wise, it, I mean, compared to its budget, it's not, these movies don't cost much, you know, like, but it made like a lot less than the first one in its opening weekend. But that's because it has a giant Angry Birds movie coming out alongside of it, along with, you know, Captain America still, you know, civiling that war. That's a verb. But no, it does good by, you know, for a movie that didn't really need a sequel, you wouldn't think a sequel is necessary. It does good by what it has.
Hmm. Okay.
The other thing I saw in a screening wise was The Hunt for the Wilder People.
From
Taika Waititi, who did What We Do in the Shadows last year, and is up to Thor Ragnarok next. This film, also very good. It features Sam Neill as a kind of he becomes the caretaker for his nephew, essentially. And he's a kind of cantankerous old man, and he's like a troublemaker youngster, and they're in New Zealand. And they eventually find themselves running away into the bush being kind of the forests of New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And they kind of go on their own as they're being hunted after by the police because the kid needs like proper care or whatnot. And it's just it's a very good looking, well done, sweet comedy. It plays it fairly low key in the same way that you kind of basically from non-American comedies, you know, you can kind of get like a drier sense of humor that I think works for a lot of people. And it kind of punctuates every 15 minutes with like outlandish moments that are really laugh out loud funny. But the whole thing all the way through is just genuinely entertaining and very sweet. And it's a good hearty recommendation. I keep wanting like to see more of what Taika Waititi has to offer. And so
I gotta go see a boy.
I need to catch up on Boy. I need to catch up. There's like another one to Eagle. What is it?
Shark vs. Eagle.
Shark vs. Eagle.
Eagle vs. Shark.
Eagle vs. Shark.
Yeah.
Which is not an Asylum film, apparently. those two for sure are good. I also want to mention my lovely girlfriend Anna and I. We got to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2: The Secret of the Ooze yesterday. There is a local art house theater that plays a lot of kind of retro releases and classics or what have you. And so they had TMNT 2 Secret of the Ooze playing in addition to having free pizza and prize giveaways. And we both won prizes.
What kind of pizza was it?
What kind of pizza was it? Hot and ready Little Caesars pizza.
Okay. All right. The best kind.
Yeah, but it was free and we got multiple slices. So it worked out. And Anna won Donatello's bow staff.
Is it actually made of wood?
It doesn't matter. And I won 10 classic episodes of the cartoon series. So there you go.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And we got to watch Vanilla Ice's greatest filmmaking effort next to Coolest.
He's on a good show now.
Next to Coolest Ice, of course.
Coolest. What'd you think of the movie?
The movie's fun. Like, I mean, you know, you and I, Brandon and Scott, actually, we did a commentary track for the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And Anna and I, we did watch that the day before, actually, just because we're getting ready for that Out of the Shadows. But that, you know, that one's obviously the superior film. But Ooze is like, it's fun. It's silly fun. Like,
I can name every line from it.
Pretty much, right? You watch it, you're just, it's so like ingrained, it seems at this point.
It is, yeah. We saw it at very early ages, so it certainly is in there in the memory banks.
It's silly. And there's a lot of good little like running jokes that run through it. And I am amused by how when the Super Shredder becomes Super Shredder, not only does his mass increase, but both his clothes and armor increases as well.
Let's not nitpick here, Aaron. Come on. It's, you know,
I said I enjoyed that, Abe. What are you talking about?
I also just like how his muscles clearly were just drawn into the fabric of the of his costume.
Dude, that was wrestling superstar Kevin Nash. I just assumed.
Was it really?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wow. For sure. Okay. You can see him now in what's that movie with Channing Tatum?
Magic Mike.
Yeah,
Kevin Nash is in those, yes. But lastly, last thing I want to mention.
Okay.
It's not quite a film, but why not? Uncharted 4 is simply incredible.
Did you finish it?
But it's just this. It's like pretty much an amazing cinematic experience that you just happen to be able to interact with.
Seems like Naughty Dog. That's like their calling card.
If Naughty Dog's knocked it out of the park once again.
So that was out now. Their name's Game Corner.
Game Corner, yes. Yeah, that's enough quickies.
Jim.
All right. That's out of the way. Let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We talk about one of the newest movie trailers, when it's coming out, what we think of it, and what have you. And this week we're talking Inferno, the third film in the $100 million Tom Hanks, Ron Howard franchise that I can't imagine has like films that we actually like in it. But somehow these are the movies that have made him the most money in his career. And Inferno is the latest from the Dan Brown series of books where Tom Hanks plays the most smug person in the world, Robert Langdon, a symbologist who goes on another apparent mission to stop some kind of deadly global plot. And so, yeah, this is coming after The Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, and now we have Inferno. So there you go. Hey, Zaki, what are your thoughts on the Dan Brown films so far, and what did you think of the trailer for this film?
Well, you know, I mentioned on my other show that if you were to cut the trailers for all three of these together into just like a big potpourri, you wouldn't know which is which. Like, it all just kind of blurs together. So I see the trailer, and I'm like, oh, there's Tom Hanks running again, and a bunch of Vatican people are after him, I guess, or something. You know,
his hair's a lot more in check. I do. I appreciate
it.
That.
It is.
That is true. So that's really the only determinant about which movie we're watching.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you know, I mean, I actually fell asleep during The Da Vinci Code too, 10 years ago. So that was a boring film. I didn't dislike Angels and Demons. I thought it was like, it was just kind of whatever, you know.
I'm right there with you. I really hated Da Vinci Code, and Angels and Demons, like, oh, it's like 24 Vatican.
There Which should have been the spinoff that Fox is doing.
I'd love to see Jack Bauer take on the Vatican.
It's the only thing left at this point, right?
Yes.
So this one, I mean, you know, it's like, am I in a hurry to see it? No. Will I probably see it? Yeah, I guess, you know.
Abe?
Not crazy for this trailer. Certainly it feels like it's been a while since Angels and Demons, which I did not see. But
there's a scene in Angels and Demons that involves a helicopter and Ewan McGregor, which is one for the ages, I say.
Is he trying to like hold on to it like Captain America in Civil War?
I'll put it this way: Ewan McGregor plays one of the Catholic priests, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But he also had lessons apparently in flying helicopters.
So I'll tell you this: I'll bet you that Inferno is going to be a movie about Tom Hanks running through, I guess, this really nice old Roman city, and then figuring out that the plot to destroy somebody was one of his friends, and Felicity Jones is going to be there. She's going to get injured, but she's going to be all right. In the end, they're going to stop this thing from taking a hold of the world because he's Robert Langdon and he's figured out the mystery. So all in all, it's going to be probably the same thing that you've seen in Da Vinci Code and in Angels and Demons, but now in a more upgraded format in which Tom Hanks looks a lot younger than he does right now.
They tamed his hair, I'm telling you.
They tamed his hair, but they also throw like tons of makeup on him.
Well, they better, because apparently Tom Hanks, who I think is like, what, in his 60s?
America's National Treasure Tom Hanks?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is he
in his 60s?
Got to be in his 60s. Yeah. He's paired up with
Felicity Jones.
With Felicity Jones this time around. First, it was Audrey Tautou. Mm-hmm. And
he is 59, by the way, so he's
59.
Not, yet,
okay.
not yet in his 50s.
He's on the brink.
First was Audrey Tautou, and I feel like I also don't like The Da Vinci Code, because Audrey Tautou, who's like, you know, she's great in the French, the Amelie in various French films from, what's the director?
Jeunet, right?
Jeunet, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Yeah. I feel like that film killed her chance to become like a crossover American star.
What?
Well, have you seen Audrey Tautou in any other American movies besides Da Vinci?
Oh, okay. I thought you meant in Amelie. And I was like, she's great in Amelie. How dare you?
Well, it's like Da Vinci Code was so bad. It's like no one benefited from this except for Paul Bettany. Like, that's like the only person that like got...
And even then, you're like, oh, it's the imaginary friend from from the Russell Crowe movie.
Yeah. So, and then the second one, Of Angels and Demons... I can't remember.
Did not see it.
I can't remember the... I think it was someone that she was in Munich. That's the only thing I can think of that had bad actors in there. But they're all, like, very much... There's a very big difference in age between Tom Hanks and these stars that he has with him.
No, it's... what's her name, right? From Man of Steel.
Yeah. Oh.
She's in Man of Steel. She was in Daredevil.
Daredevil.
Yeah, she's the Kingpin's wife in Daredevil.
Oh, okay.
The show, not the movie.
Got it. That's what confused me. Okay.
Yeah, she was Lara in Man of Steel. She's in Angels and Demons.
Hmm, okay.
To correct myself, Da Vinci Code is Tom Hanks' fifth biggest film behind Castaway, Two Toy Stories, and Forrest Gump. That said, I'm not a fan of these movies. I think Tom Hanks is generally bad in them, which is not something I like saying very much, because he's generally good at everything, lesser things. But I think the character he plays is just, he's too smug. Like, it seems like he needs to, he's a symbologist who knows everything and needs everyone to know that he knows everything. It's a very annoying.
I mean, come on, he's a professor at Harvard. Of course he knows everything. Apparently.
But he's very happy to tell you that he knows everything.
Mm.
And so what? Watching another trailer is like, all right, well, they got his hair down. Maybe they'll get his attitude in check as well. But I can't was there any, like, threat in the Da Vinci Code? Like, was there kind of any worldwide threat that was going on? Like, Angels and Demons had something. It had, like, an actual bomb. That was, like, it was, like, antimatter or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I can't remember.
I could not tell you what that movie's about.
I can't remember anything like Ian McKellen getting something that would make him more rich than he already is. Like, I don't know what that was.
Sure. We should just make up the entire plot that's probably a lot better than the actual movie.
Given what I've heard about Dan Brown's writing, I'd probably say that's accurate. But yeah, Inferno, you know, like, I want to root for Ron Howard.
Me
like,
too.
I feel like he needs something here because he's had, like, he had Rush, which was great.
People never saw it.
And then he had In the Heart of the Sea, which was a disappointment.
It's all right.
And so it's like, I want him to, like, come back, but it's like, it's a little sad that it's like, well, he has to go back to this damn Robert Langdon franchise to make something happen again.
Yeah, for that three-peat.
So, I mean, it doesn't seem like a high bar to cross if it happens to be the best of the three, so we just have to hope for the best in this situation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I, you know, see it, but not terribly excited about it.
You sound super excited. Yeah. You and Zachy both. Zachy can't wait to do the press junket.
Yeah.
So, Tom, how was the movie?
Well,
that's Tom Hanks. Now, I personally haven't met Tom Hanks, but I'm sure that he's really kind in all of his press junkets and in everything in general.
Wouldn't it be funny if he's just like a Bruce Willis in junkets? Like, that would be like the nightmare scenario. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're like, Tom Hanks, I can't wait. And he's just an ass.
Mm, Bruce Willis. He seems so friendly with David Letterman, though.
Who, Bruce Willis?
Bruce Willis, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well,
he always does comedy bits.
There's a difference.
Bruce Willis is, like, legendary for his douchebaggery in these junkets, right?
I had no idea, actually.
Yeah, if you go
and I'm not one to defend him.
Go to, like, Bruce Willis. It was for Red 2.
You're really screwing our Bruce Willis on X-Men Apocalypse show next week, Gabe, by saying all this stuff.
So he's just terrible in Red 2. He's just really mean to everybody.
That's one instance, yes.
Yeah, and I mean I'm not like speaking out of school. It's well known that he's just a royal pain in the ass.
I can put it in the show notes. Actually, I got it.
Yeah, we'll add that for the listeners so that they don't think that we're just talking out of school here.
Adding that, I got the link. I'm adding that to the show notes. Anyway. Why did we get on that? No idea. Because Tom Hanks is a nice
Tom
guy.
Hanks, yeah. National Treasure Tom Hanks.
Yeah. The Inferno arrives in theaters October 28th this year, just in time for Halloween.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the go-to Halloween movie you're going to be able.
All right, let's move on now. Let's get away from that. That was trailer talk. Let's move on to our main review for The Nice Guys.
You're a private investigator?
My profession is very complicated, okay? It's nuanced.
That's a lot of blood.
Beat people up and charge money?
Yeah.
Sad, isn't it?
How much would you charge to beat up my friend Janet?
What?
How much you got?
$20?
That's good. This conversation is over.
That should have been some of the trailer for The Nice Guys. This is Shane Black, who's back and spinning together another mismatched buddy action comedy tale about two down-on-their-luck guys for hire. Russell Crowe is the abbot to Gosling's Costello in a story surrounding a missing girl and lots of dead people around her. Mainly, though, we watch this enforcer and this private eye doing what they can to work together while comedic mayhem ensues. Zachy, what have been your thoughts on Shane Black taking the director's chair in recent years, and what did you think of Nice Guys?
You know, I always enjoy his work as a director. I loved Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which has become sort of this beloved cult thing, you know, in the 10 years or whatever since it came out. And I remember seeing it at the time, and it's kind of like history repeating itself, because not a lot of people watched Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and it became sort of through word of mouth, it's become a popular thing. And I feel like the same thing's going to happen with this one. I think that nobody does buddy movie banter better than Shane Black. Even when he did Iron Man 3, he put Robert Downey and Don Cheadle together in sort of a Riggs and Murtaugh configuration.
Yes.
I think he's just drawn to doing that. And I think I'm kind of like, do it because you're so damn good at it.
And what'd you take away from The Nice Guys?
Oh my gosh. I haven't enjoyed myself like this in a long time. I wrote in my review that it's like a tonic to all the CGI nonsense and whatever that, which I love. But
Shane Black is now partially responsible for Iron Man.
Which he is. This is almost his, like, all right, I did that, but there's this, you know. And it's funny, actually, because I saw the on my way to the theater to watch this, they released the trailer for the Lethal Weapon TV series. And so I watched that. Yeah, exactly. Which was my reaction. I watched that on my way to The Nice Guys. And I was like, well, that was what it was. But I need, like, the real version to sort of chase that out. You know what I mean? I need, like, you see how much he is missing from them trying to do those characters, and it's just his presence is absent.
Abe?
This is a movie. And I say that in the highest respect to all the other movies out there too, sort of. But this is a movie because it has sort of an original plot, and I say sort of because, you know, it's kind of a detective plot that kind of just unravels the mystery. But there's characters here that you really grow to like. And I really grew to like Russell Crowe because, sure, he's kind of like a brute and a thug at first. And then there's this moment where he's talking with another character in the movie, and he's got to kind of lie to her. And he's like, oh, you know, now I feel as though there's another side.
Well, even his brutishness and thugness is all based around he takes cases where he fights people that are taking advantage of young women.
He's essentially Deadpool minus all the toxic acid on and mutant genes in his body. So he's like anti-hero because he doesn't really want the fame, but he takes on these jobs just to make sure that these bad guys stay away from good people. And I really like this a lot. I think that the characters really develop as you go along, and they really establish themselves as people that you want to follow. Mm-hmm. The plot thickens, and you know, you become really engaged in what they're trying to solve for. And the way that Shane Black writes things, anybody could go. So I was kind of surprised when they finally find a character and that character is just like, well, that's how the cookie crumbles.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, it feels like
that's what they say in the film too. Where Ryan Gosling walks up, he looks up at Russell Crowe, he takes off his sunglasses, like, I guess that's how the cookie crumbles. And then the next thing happens.
That's how their TV show would go. But it certainly feels as though you're having a really good time with the movie, and the actors, it seems like those guys, all of them, including all the kids, they probably had a good time filming the movie as well. So it just seems like it's all around pretty fun. And I mean, if they didn't have fun, they're hiding it very, very well in these public screenings or in these public places like the Colbert Report. I'm sorry, the Late Show with Stephen Colbert and whatever else too. Because it seems like they're just having a blast making all these press junket tours with everybody. So the movie is great. It's just really fun and really engaging, and then as you go on, you just really want to see more of what happens to these characters.
I think the greatest takeaway is that yes, Crowe and Gosling are very good together, and it seems to stem from a real friendship they formed during the making of this film. It feels very much like this is a pairing that could go on to make, you know, future things. Whether that happens or not, I'm not sure. I guess I largely agree with what you guys have said, I'll get into some of my qualms with the film. Mm-hmm. I miss there being more character stuff, like more character from others, because I feel like Crowe and Gosling, they're great, and you learn a lot about Healy and March, and Ryan Gosling's daughter, Angerie Rice, who plays Holly March, who gets mm-hmm. very much involved in this film. Their very young daughter, who's the kind of the adult in the relationship between father and daughter, and you know, they're fine. But like you have a number of supporting characters like Matt Bomer, Keith David, and Kim Basinger, who I think is kind of terrible in this movie. I think she may be a little bit out of practice with being in film for a while. But like, it seems like all of them should have more to say or do that would define who they are more, and I'm missing that, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like they're around, especially like Keith David. Like, Keith David's a very experienced character actor, and I can't think of anything he does in this movie besides fight people, right?
And wear a nice red suit.
He's Keith David. He can wear all kinds of nice suits. But like, it seems like there's a lot of that, which isn't the worst thing because it's only sacrificed for the sake of really, really, you know, putting up the Healy and March characters. So like even the film's pacing, I think, is kind of it's kind of slack in it because you want to develop these characters, and I appreciate that. It's kind of a counterpoint to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is very manic and very much more fast paced. I love that movie, but like you can kind of see it kind of, it spins constantly. This movie really kind of takes its time to delve into what it's doing more, which I think is a tribute to kind of the 70s period and kind of Private Eye type films from that time and that kind of genre that it's calling towards. I also think the story, it very much feels like it's kind of secondhand to the you know, the leads, where you have a story that has a lot of, I guess, twists and turns and things that could be more interesting if the film wanted it to be, but it really just kind of goes over the bare minimum to get you through what they're discovering as they go along. Now, all that said, this movie is hilarious. There's a lot of fun going on, especially between Healy and March, as like Crowe's, he's not a private eye, but he's here like observing March's technique, and March is like, he's halfway decent at what he does, but he's also incredibly bumbling in what he does, which is best emblemized in that scene at the like when you first kind of see him trying to do something where he like tries to break into a glass window and he cuts his hand and nearly dies from bleeding to death, and somehow that's the funniest thing they could say in the movie. Like, there's a lot of stuff like that, and there's a lot of like something that Shane Black I think has become very good at, which is turning like going one way and then the result is something completely different. And it's usually in a very comedic and violent way. And he does that a lot in this movie as far as what things, where the direction things take.
Yeah. I definitely know what you mean by the plot kind of taking a backseat to March and Healy. But I felt that was okay, because when I was comparing it to something like Inherent Vice, where people, it was very much more mixed than
that's
I would
say
Nice Guys
is. Constantly through this one. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the set designs are bit, I mean, they probably shot the same locations.
I mean, they're LA set, these detectives right. are. So yeah, it makes
yeah.
sense.
In the same sound studio or sound lot. But it certainly is a little bit more of a coherent story, and one that I can piece together without having to think like, oh, well, maybe they smoked reefer at that one scene in Inherent Vice, and that's why this is happening. Well, now this one's a little bit more cut and dry, but I mean, it kept me going to try and figure out what the mystery was, because as they were adding characters, I didn't so much mind that I didn't know them. The only other character that I was more interested about, minus the trio, was Johnny Boy, and that was probably because of how Keith Gabe
describes
the most
like, badass Matt Bomb yeah. is ever going to be in a movie.
That's right.
He has no character.
But no, I know what you mean by the story maybe taking a little bit of a backseat.
Well, because it gets to a point where Kim Basinger gives like some key lines towards the end of the film, and I think in a better plotted movie or one that established her better, or if she was just better in general in the movie, it would have left more impact, but it really doesn't. And I feel like I was supposed to take away something that I didn't from it.
Hmm.
That's a good question, because I wasn't sure what to take away from it either, because I know that there
because
was...
you know what I'm talking about.
I know, she's talking about the city, and it's like, oh, well, the city's never going to go down because...
Well, it's almost like the what we all learned moment, like, and it's like trying to speak to like that, and it's like, All right, that left no impact on me, and so it kind of takes it down a notch for me in that reason.
Well, and then the next cut is just them with the Yellow Pages ad.
Well, yeah, like the ending's very low-key, which I like. I like how it... Because again, it defies expectation a lot, which I appreciate, and it leads to this kind of madcap finale of that almost is like Rube Goldberg kind of deaths for a lot of characters.
Well, that's great in the last like 15-20 minutes, because Ryan Gosling has said audibly that he feels like he's invincible, and so as these things happen, I'm thinking, man, he kind of is almost invincible here. So yeah, it's pretty funny the way that all that stuff unfolds to you, and the way that you described it, Rube Goldberg is kind of almost on point. But in terms of the nitpicks, Zachy, did you have any nitpicks or things that you felt were deficient in the movie?
You know, it's all the stuff that Aaron said, I see it. I didn't see them as nitpicks, because to me, like, it really was just, let's just watch these guys who have such great chemistry go through this pretty boilerplate storyline, but that's not really what this is about. You know what I mean? So I was, to me, like, I acknowledge those as flaws, but not failings.
It's not knocking me down from appreciating the movie for what it was. I wouldn't say, like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang's one of my favorite movies. It's not, like, up there at that level, but it's still, you know, very entertaining. It's just, and I wouldn't say what I'm saying are nitpicks either. I think they are flaws, but they're not things that really overall affected my experience to think it's not a good film.
Yeah. I will say this, and this is apropos of nothing, but I mean, we're talking about Kim Basinger. I agree, she was pretty unmemorable in this, but it struck me just seeing her and seeing Russell Crowe together, you know, you think about LA Confidential.
Right.
And I was just like, it's another statement about how women are not allowed to age in Hollywood, where
they pile on makeup on her.
Yeah, and she's clearly had some work done and whatever. And here we have Russell Crowe, who looks—I mean, it's about 20 years later, and it looks like it's 30 years later.
Yeah,
if you look
Confidential, that guy—he's like super skinny, he's square jawed,
yeah.
Looks like
that was 97.
Fights.
Yeah, you know, so that was just something I noticed.
Yeah, it becomes increasingly more apparent that The Congress, the movie with Robin Wright, is definitely real. So. Especially with Michael Douglas being on screen and then Robert Downey Jr. It's like, oh, they did take 3D models of these guys. they can always keep using them in movies at a young age. So it's kind of spooky how that's coming to fruition here.
It is.
But I was going to say that I really enjoyed one of the scenes in which I felt like it was some of the more like real acting, not in a derogatory or negative way, but it's when Russell Crowe goes to see Holly at the house and she's like, you're standing in the toilet. So he takes his foot out and shakes it off a little bit. And, you know, it's pretty cool just the way that she's envisioned this. And I envisioned their house there, too. And I was like, oh, well, you know, now he's getting the rug wet. So
dramatic acting, I guess.
Dramatic acting, sure. But I just like the way that I was curious about what that plot of land was. And then when I found out what it is, then everything made sense as to why she's walking in such strange ways.
Yeah, there's some neat like tragedy going on here where you learn why Ryan Gosling, why Holland March is, you know, where he is in his life, what's happened to him to make it. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean he was a better PI before or whatnot, but just kind of the state that he's in and why he's going through the motions of what he's doing. And the same with Russell Crowe, where you learn his backstory. Like, there's neat stuff here. And again, like, I think saying the movie's not like as manic paced as other, like, that's not a flaw. That's more of, I appreciate that the movie takes its time to really get into these things for what it's doing. It comes at the expense of certain other things that, you know, I'm not as big of a fan of, but at the same time, I'm not enjoying the movie for those reasons. But I do think, yes, you get good work from both of these actors as these characters and learning who they are. It's neat how you can kind of picture both a Jackson Healy movie and a Holland March movie as like two different like detective ones. And I believe that's how they wrote it. Shane Black and his co-writer, Anthony Bagorozzi, they both wrote for the different characters separately. I learned that.
Oh, interesting.
And so like it, and I assume that, you know, they collaborated on how to bring them together, what have you. But I found that as a neat approach to, like, you know, writing for two different characters who I think could really fuel their own detective series if necessary. And like seeing that come together, it's neat. It's a neat kind of pairing up. And again, they're very good together. And Ryan Gosling's, you know, his screeching as he gets more panicked is never not entertaining.
Yeah.
Nor is Russell Crowe calling him on it.
Did you fall down the hill?
I had like two, three drinks tops.
Yeah, that's why you can't walk straight.
Oh, excuse me. I'm carrying a dead body and I have a schwanz in my face. So I'm sorry I'm not Baryshnikov.
You can't even say Baryshnikov. You did, didn't you? You fell down the hill. You get drunk. You lose your gun, you take your header off the balcony, and now you're going to tell me it's like a hallowed time on a detective ploy, right?
It was very slippery up there, okay? I was in the pool.
You were in the pool?
Yeah.
Why?
I had to question the mermaids. What were you doing while I was working?
I had a question.
Yep.
Ryan Gosling's character, I think there's an interesting connection to water that he's kind of, that you see throughout the film, where the film begins with him in a bathtub, fully dressed in, but he's in a filled bathtub.
Uh-huh.
Later on, you find him swimming in a pool, trying to get answers from mermaids.
Yes.
And then towards the end of the film, he's in a pool again. I was wondering, did you see any kind of symbolism going on with his connection to water?
I'm not really sure, aside from the whole entire drowning and alcohol thing, but they never really address that, even the alcoholism in the movie.
They address that he gets drunk a lot.
He gets drunk a lot, yeah. But I never thought about the water part.
That's literally how he's introduced to the film, and then you keep continuing to find him submerged in water in various scenes.
Yeah.
I guess the idea is that he's, I don't know, he finds himself drowning in, you know,
life's problems?
Yes, essentially, mm-hmm. And finally finds his way out of it.
But Holly's amazing.
She's competent, that's for sure.
Yeah. She drives. She's like,
she drives. 12. She literally drives to different cases.
She drives him when he's drunk.
He's like 10?
Like... she's probably like 11 or 12, yeah. I enjoyed that part of it. What was I going to say? Also, Bo Knapp is in this movie, and I just remember a lot of people from The Signal because Aaron and I interviewed the writers of that, but those guys are getting pretty good work.
Yeah.
So I'm glad.
I was happy to see him pop up. I'm like, oh, Signal.
Yep.
Exactly. I said that out loud. So everyone hears
so everyone's like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Did you guys also find yourselves laughing?
Every week when I watch Blackish, when Lawrence Fishburne walks up, I'm like, oh, Signal.
Anthony, it's an alien spaceship. So, did you guys find yourself laughing at parts of the movie in which other people didn't laugh?
I would say I maybe chuckled at some points when it wasn't like as like a super laugh out loud moment, but just more of like a that's a clever line type thing or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Walton's jokes that actually...
which I didn't get.
Well, yeah, because I didn't watch the Walton, but I'm aware of it. And I know who was on it. And there was... There's a show, The Americans, that I write about every week, which I think is great terrific. Show. It's on FX, and there's a character on there who was John Boy from The Waltons, and something very specific happens to him on The Americans this week. So I'm like, oh, and now we got John Boy and a bunch of Waltons references and The Nice Guys. It's really all tying together. Between that and Hannibal Buress, it's been a very connected week.
See, that's a good point that you bring up, the Hannibal Buress stuff, because I was kind of afraid that it was going to go along the path of a whole bunch of hallucinations and whatever else, but I'm glad that it didn't.
Yeah, I was happy that was just, it wasn't what it looked like it could have been.
Yeah.
And I love that essentially the one hallucination is just a setup for a really funny gag near the end.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I love how Ryan Gosling, as smart as he is, he's also got the line of, somebody stole your suitcase and filled it with paper. It's like, Ryan. But no, I agree that the physical comedy from Ryan Gosling and just, you know, his mannerisms when he finds a body by a tree and he's trying to get Russell Crowe.
Lou Costello.
Yeah, it's just, you know, sounds that he's making is fantastic. So, you know, Ryan Gosling is a great dramatic actor. He's great in Blue Valentine. And he's great in a lot of his movies, but comedy, I mean...
Yeah, between this and The Big Short, he's been delivering on comedy lately.
He has been, and I wouldn't really say that they're, like, outright comedies. This one a little bit more so, but I'm glad that he's, you know, putting himself out there to do these types of things, so he seems to have a sense of humor about himself.
He hasn't been this funny since The Believer. I agree. It's nice to see him lighten up, essentially.
Yeah,
which has carried over into, you know, the marketing for this film. You see him just in random places with Russell Crowe, and they're having a ball together. And Russell Crowe, he's game. He's game for all this stuff. He's good in this movie. I genuinely like Russell Crowe in all things. I don't think he's a bad actor whatsoever. But I think, and it's neat to see him kind of take a. I'm trying to think of other Russell Crowe comedies, and I think of The Mystery Alaska. Is that like the last thing I can think of?
that was like 1996 or.
It's like one of his first movies, like first American movies anyway.
Yeah, I can't really think of any, that's certainly. I think that he's game for this movie as well, and that's really what. Brings
Winter's Tale, obviously.
That's the best comedy of the year that year. That was
a
like
good year. A good year, wasn't that a comedy?
He drank a lot of wine and Ridley Scott paid for it. So, I mean, I guess that's funny.
There we go.
Yeah, on the whole, I enjoyed the aspects of it. And I'm glad that they've paid a lot of attention to detail. This is the nuance stuff that we were sort of talking to earlier on the show. Because, Aaron, you mentioned that they were driving through L.A. and you saw a Joss G poster. Well, they're driving by, like, the Comedy Store, and it's like, there's Tim Allen on the marquee. And I was like, this is great.
There's a lot of Tim Allen. Kept saying Tim Allen on there. If you really want to pay attention, they had Tim Allen like as one of the names like coming up, and then there was the next marquee was Tim Allen today. So like they paid attention to the fact that it's like days have passed, and so now we actually have Tim Allen as
Tim Allen's actually there.
Yeah,
I have to pay more attention next time I see it.
But no, it's a very. I mean, I'd say it's slightly stylized as far as the 70s go. Like it does kind of it matches the time period, but it certainly. It makes you very aware that it is the 70s, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad thing whatsoever. It was noticeable that it's like obviously the film is made now, and so it's trying to call back to a period, and it's doing its effort to because even the film is itself, it's not like a parody of detective fiction, but it's certainly like it's in the same vein as something like what Edgar Wright was doing, where he's never making parodies, he's making very clever homages to things, and that's. This one's certainly going for that kind of style.
Yeah, and there's never like that you know bassy like 70s song where somebody's also using the line "Jive Turkey." So it's not like that kind of a 70s movie. You know what I mean?
It's not trying to be a purposely downplaying certain characters for whatever reason.
Yeah, so you know it's just set in the 70s, and they have a lot of callbacks and fun little things that make it, you know, 1977. But ultimately, it's just a movie.
I think we're all pretty good on The Nice Guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
When would you say people should see this movie?
Probably theaters.
Yeah.
I would say see it in the theater, but based on the box office, wait a week and it'll be on home video. So.
Oh. Yeah.
Sadly, The Nice Guys fourth place this weekend, $11 million, which I think is even a little bit lower than expectation for it. I can't imagine it costing very much though. Probably be like around. I don't know, 50, if I had to guess, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you have giant movies in front of it with an R-rated detective drama or comedy drama. Like, Yeah, I see, and you know, opening on significantly less screens than the others, I can see that happening. Regardless, The Nice Guys is in theaters now, and I would happily recommend it for sure.
Yeah, and it's only going to go down from there. It's kind of a bummer, but you should definitely should go see it. I hope that it has staying power, because this summer is just full of like three new releases every week. So it's kind of just crazy.
I can see it getting on like a, you know, getting that kind of that following that it'll gain.
So. A steady train.
Yeah. Well, like kind of life after
death.
Theater.
The Biggie Smalls album.
All right, let's move on now. Let's get to our sponsor real quick today, Abe.
Yeah.
Do you like books?
I love books.
Do you drive around though, and sometimes think I could be reading a book right now?
I think about that all the time.
Wouldn't it be just easier
to
you know, not have to drive and read?
This is true.
Well, I'm sorry, you can't do that all the time. You got work to do. You got drive places to drive to.
Yeah.
But to solve that, you could go to audible.com or audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast and get a free audiobook of your choice, or you could listen to a book narrated
by... You know what
by...
I could do?
What?
I could then drive and listen to this audiobook.
You can listen to an audiobook. It'd be great. You can listen to an audiobook narrated by Oscar winner Timothy Hutton.
From TNT's... I forget the show that he's on TNT.
Leverage?
Leverage.
Yep. I was waiting for that. that's just one person that could narrate a book for you. There's so many. Mm-hmm. But you can go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast and find a book for free and try for a 30-day free trial membership. If you don't like that service, though, if you're like, you know what, I will just drive and not listen to books, that's fine. But you get to keep that book they downloaded for free. So there you go. Be a winner.
Read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right, let's move on. Let's get down to feedback.
Feedback.
This is where I go over some of the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast. I post up a lot of questions during the week. You listeners are happy to answer them, and then we read those here. So, you know, feel free to chime in if you, you know, want to be involved with our feedback section. And the first one here we have is favorite detective story. And Jason writes Lethal Weapon. Philip writes Memento.
It's pretty good.
Justin adds, both of you beat me to it, so I will add 7.
It's a lot of detecting in 7.
I'm a huge LA Confidential fan, by the way.
That is a good movie. Yeah. I remember like, we talked about it. I saw it like 14 years later after it was released, and I was like, I should have seen this when it came out. Yeah. Rollo Tomasi, still one of my favorite things to say. Zachy, any favorite detective stories?
LA Confidential is definitely up there. Also, there's a movie called State of Play, which is based on a BBC miniseries, and that's up there for me as well.
The BBC miniseries is quite good, and the movie... there's a huge issue that I can't actually remember the details of. I just remember having this issue with it about the ending. But I think it feels like a legit plot hole, but I don't really know the details to get into it. That said, I do overall, I think it's a pretty good movie. And I think that was one of the first instances where Jason Bateman really impressed me as an actor. He has like a small role in that film where he does some real heavy dramatic work. And I was like, this is post like Arrested Development. And the first time he's doing kind of something a little different. I was like, this is some really good stuff here.
Yeah. Okay.
To fit with the Nice Guys, I'll add in The Long Goodbye with Elliot Gould, the Robert Altman film. That's a terrific play of the Philip Marlowe character for classic noir.
Next question we ask everybody, what is your favorite buddy comedy? For instance, Private Investigator movie pairing. Jason has Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. I'm too old for this. Sly Stallone and Kurt Russell. I'm guessing he's talking about Tango and Cash.
The one and only.
Or he's talking about Cobra 2 with cameo. There's no Cobra 2. Manisha, is there?
No.
Okay. Manisha has Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, 21 Jump Street, End of Watch, The Heat, and Rush Hour.
That's almost a flawless set of films right there.
No, I was thinking about that. And I was like, that's a really good set of buddy comedies or buddy cops.
I'm not a Heat fan. That's where my...
might just add in Hot Fuzz and then you'd be like, perfect pairing.
Replace the Heat with the Hot Fuzz and I'll be fine. Mm. That's me. I know. I get it.
Philip has Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law as Holmes and Watson, which is pretty good. Justin has Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. Also, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence in Bad Boys.
Yeah.
And lastly, David has Mike and Rich in 2015's masterpiece, Space Cop.
I'm not aware of Space Cop.
I'm not aware of Space Cop either, so I'm going to have to go with you on that one, David. I'll take your word for it.
The next question we ask, Shane Black is responsible for a lot of action comedies from over the years. What's your favorite from him? And let's maybe keep down the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang love for a bit. Manish writes, I'm a staunch Iron Man 3 supporter. Philip writes Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Iron Kiss Kiss Iron Man 3 times. That's what he wrote.
Yeah.
Justin writes, I haven't seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but I love all the Lethal Weapon movies. The Long Kiss, to be fair, Lethal Weapon, he wrote the first one and he kind of actively was against the sequels.
He wrote the first one when he was 19.
Yeah, and he wrote the second one, and then the studio wanted a different kind of version of that, and so he said, no, thank you, and took his kind of went away from that.
He made Predator.
Yeah. That was before, yeah. He acted in Predator. He didn't write.
He did.
But he's writing the next one and directing the next one. And Justin also adds, Long Kiss Goodnight was pretty good. I have a soft spot for Geena Davis. I think you have said before, but I really like the Last Action Hero's concept of what it was trying to do. That I can agree with. I'm not a big fan of the movie, but I do like the concept.
Did you say last week that Last Action Hero, there's like a part where the guy just kills some guy at the end?
I said in our commentary that something that always humored me about Last Action Hero is that this is a big, like the movies Arnold Schwarzenegger is supposed to be in this world. He's like the biggest movie star ever. Obviously, like, at the time he was, but like he's the big movie star, and his like super popular franchise, which I assume everyone sees, supposedly ends with Tom Noonan as an axe murderer killing his young child. That's apparently how a summer blockbuster of Arnold Schwarzenegger is supposed to end.
The poster makes it look so fun, though. He's like swinging on a rope.
Well, that in the last, yeah. Well, even that's part of my problem with the movie. It gets very dark. Like, that's really dark for a movie about a kid with a magic ticket, but okay.
All right.
As far as Shane Black goes, by the way, I love with Bruce Willis and Damon Wayans. Last Boy Scout.
I was like, I can see the cover. I can see the cover in my head right now.
Yeah, they're just standing back to back, looking down at you.
The VHS cover. I used to see that. I used to pass by that all the time at Hollywood Video.
Here's that irony. Now Damon Wayans is starring in Lethal Weapon, the TV series.
Wow. Yeah, Murtaugh. Full circle.
Yeah,
I assume their names are Riggs and Murtaugh, right?
It is, and I saw like the 3-minute thing from Fox. I was like, they did not change anything about this.
That's
just on TV
minus
now.
Minus the appealing chemistry and crackling writing.
Well, the opening scene's also Riggs is in a bank and he just murders people.
He murders like 4 people, and then the bank blows up. Anyway,
when I was watching it, I saw Damon Wayans pop up, and there was a half second where I was like, is that Damon Wayans or is that Damon Wayans Jr.? then the logic is like, well, he'd be too old for this shit, as he says, so it probably has to be Damon Wayans, but those two do look remarkably similar.
Last thing about the Lethal Weapon TV series, why do they have Murtaugh driving like a 1980s Chevy truck?
That's how old he is.
Guys, come on. All right, next question.
Other Shane Black references you want to make before we get away?
Big fan of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I do love the Long Kiss Goodnight. That has one of my favorite lines from Sam Jackson. What? Why can't you just shoot him in the shoulder? Because
what about that?
The other scene I like is when Geena Davis gets her skills back and she's cutting up the vegetables for her husband and child, and she throws a knife at the refrigerator.
Here it is. It's when Sam Jackson's like, everyone knows when you make an assumption, you make an ass out of you and umption.
It's pretty good. That's Shane Black for you.
Yeah.
All right. Next question we asked everybody, what is your favorite 70s set crime story? Philip has Cry Freedom, if it counts. Apartheid's a crime against humanity, after all. Frown emoticon.
I did not see that coming as the answer to that question. Yes, it's fine.
Big fan of the emoticons. Manish has Zodiac and Casino. Zodiac really freaked me out a lot when I watched it, because like, this is too real, because Zachy, you and I are in the Bay.
It's
and
true.
I was like, I know exactly where all this is, so I kind of don't want to watch this movie.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
The ultimate Fincher film.
Lastly, Justin has, can it be from the 70s? If so, The Warriors.
All right, come out and play. What's the most memorable comedic movie death? Philip writes, when Thunder explodes in Big Trouble Little China.
Uh-huh.
And Justin writes, when the director steps on it, when I believe Steve Coogan, the director, steps on a mine in Tropic Thunder.
Which isn't bad.
There's some great ones in kind of all of Shane Black's stuff, actually, but... I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is the scene where like Robert Downey Jr. like takes all the bullets but one out, and then like tries to think the odds are against him shooting a guy, and then he ends up shooting him right in the face the first time, and his response is like, there was like a 1 in 8 chance that you're like, and Val Kilmer was like, who taught you math? Like, it just makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. One of the first ones that came to mind when we asked that question was from Spy, Zach Woods, when he's out in the alleyway. And he's still trying to pretend like he doesn't know what's going on. And then he's just flipping off Rose Byrne. He's like, like he just hopes that she dies, and it's great.
There's some good ones in The Nice Guys too. I mean, there's a scene involving falling into a pool that has some dire consequences for people.
Right.
Last question we asked everybody: what is your favorite, or what are some of your favorite movie pranks? Michael Lee has The Help, where Octavia Spencer's character feeds Bryce Dallas Howard's character a shit pie. And lastly, Justin Weatherby has, spoiler alert, The Game, in which he says that the game, all of it, is kind of like a giant prank.
That's true. You know, at first I didn't get what he was, I didn't realize he was talking about the movie, The Game, and then I was like, oh, that actually does make perfect sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was, Michael Douglas is The Game, yeah?
Yeah, no, I didn't get it at first.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's just, maybe because, honestly, it's because, like, it's a caps thing. If it wrote The Game in caps, I would probably would have, mm-hmm. like, figured out what he was going for.
Okay. You were thinking he was talking about the rapper, The Game. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, something. I don't know. Maybe yeah. I thought it was like a joke. I wasn't missing or picking up, but I got it. But it's a good answer.
Yeah.
Now we get some questions. Questions that were asked to us, and you know, Zach, feel free to chime in as well. Mm-hmm. Jason asks, "Do you think we will ever get a good Green Lantern or Fantastic Four movie?" I'm not beyond saying that we can. I also wouldn't be beyond saying we've kind of maybe got a pretty decent Fantastic Four movie in those first couple from Tim Story. I don't hate those movies.
I agree with you on that, yeah.
I think they're dumb fun.
Dumb fun. I don't really know if we're going to see any more great... I mean, I'm not a huge fan of 20th Century Fox owning the rights to Fantastic Four and Green Lantern, unless they reboot it and do whatever else. I mean, DC had that big shakeup this past week, and I'm glad, but I don't really know what that means for the rest of the movies and how well they're going to turn out.
I can only just be optimistic that the next Green Lantern Corps, I believe is the name of the next upcoming Green Lantern film. I can only hope that, you know, they just do it right.
If Mark Strong is in it, cool. I'm on board.
Well, he won't be, right? Because they got to do a new thing.
Not going to come back as Sinestro.
You know, I think the Green Lantern movie that's out there, for as terrible as it is, I mean, it has a lot of structural problems and everything else, but I think a broader problem that it exposed is that, I don't know how interesting it is to watch these guys flying around in a bunch of CG, throwing a bunch of CGI crap at each other. You know what I mean? Like, I think just visually, they may have kind of hit the wall with the concept, where it's like everything else, for all the problems that it has. I mean, they visualized the Green Lantern universe pretty spot on, and yeah, it was kind of dull, you know?
I agree. And I'm not the biggest fan of Ryan Reynolds, some roles notwithstanding, but it just, everything about just that character, it just kind of like made me yawn. I agree. Yes. So like, if this Green Lantern Corps apparently is going to have multiples, like including like John Stewart and what have you. So like, I want them to find a way to make, you know, these characters work. Like, yeah, because I agree with you that like the idea of seeing, it's kind of ironic that the idea of a character who can imagine anything is boring to watch on screen.
Yeah.
But with this guy, I mean, we have to, like, I think 2020 to worry about this.
Yay.
It's a long ways away.
yeah. And yeah, as far as Fantastic Four goes, I mean, at this point, you just have to hope that Fox and Marvel Studios make some kind of Sony-like deal where they can actually use the characters and maybe
kind of
get them back on track in that way and somehow.
Right.
I don't, like, the point that they're at right now, it's like, I don't, and especially after watching certain other movies that are coming out soon, I mean, I mean, trust in Simon Kinberg, the producer, you know, the Kevin Feige of Fox, it's not, you know, quite that high right now. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, we're going to get to it next week. I haven't seen X-Men Apocalypse yet, but part of my problem with the X-Men movies in general is that I just never really liked any of them except for X2 that much. And that might be a problem with the 20th Century Fox kind of making those movies. And, you know, Marvel has come along in recent years and really blown me away by some of the direction that they've taken. We talked about this, Aaron and I, on the podcast in Phase 1, where they had different directors making these movies. And you can definitely feel like, you know, like Thor, where you can feel the Shakespearean play of it all. And then Captain America, First Avenger.
We argued some of them can, for sure. And
some of them can, yeah.
I think now, where you've had that shakeup at Marvel with the Ike Perlmutter, who, you know, how now Kevin Feige, now that Kevin Feige is even more in charge than he was, mm-hmm. I'd like to think that the various directors he brings on to these upcoming with like Doctor Strange or what have you, they'll have even more of a directorial stamp. Like, part of my problem with Iron Man 3 is that, as but you know, I find it entertaining enough, but it, the script, it's there, but in like visually, like, I just, it doesn't, like, feel like a Shane Black thing to me. It feels like, all right, like, he added some lines and some character dynamics that work to his to his advantage, but, like, as a movie, it feels like a Marvel movie, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it feels like it's minimizing what could have been done from a director that had, like, more say of how his creative vision should look.
Yeah.
And I can only hope that, you know, the Black Panther movie of Ryan Coogler, or again, the Doctor Strange movie.
With his name is from the horror movies.
With Scott Derrickson.
Scott Derrickson.
Or even the next Ant-Man movie, whatever Peyton Reed's, you know, look is. Like, I hope that's more pronounced in what's to come.
So.
I think with, I mean, it's, when you look at the X-Men movies, and Aaron, I think you disliked Apocalypse a little more than me. I wasn't a big fan of it either. But
we'll get
I feel, and I mean, the corollary to me is, like, I look at that, and the series at this point is sort of like, it's been in motion for so long that I don't think one mediocre movie is going to kill it, because it's like, all right, well, let's see what they do with the next one, you know? And I feel like for me with Fantastic Four, had they just continued on, instead of rebooting it, just fix it. Like, fix it as you go, you know, make course corrections. We would have been talking about, like, the fourth or fifth Fantastic Four movie in that original series by now. And even if they had done some recasting along the way, whatever, that's what you do. And that would have been preferable, probably, in my opinion, to this sort of baby with the bathwater approach that they did last year.
It's a weird position to be in, where, because I wanted to support the, I was very big on the, what, you know, leading up to the film, leading up to actually seeing it, I was big on what they were offering. I liked the casting. I had no problem with the casting whatsoever. I can go all day about why Black Human Torch is not the end of the world. My God.
Right.
I liked the idea. While it may not have been the best to apply the kind of realistic and grounded approach to the Fantastic Four necessarily, I liked the idea that Trank wanted to try something differently. Now, we'll never really know how things happened and before we get, like, you know, some kickstarted documentary that chronicles the entire making of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
But, like, we'll never really get the final word on, like, was it really a Trank issue, or was it, like, the producers trying to boss him around too much, or was it a combination of the two? Like, we won't know what that was, but I was happy to support that vision for it. And now we're just kind of stuck with this really weird and pretty not successful movie that some really hate, Abe. And some are like, well, they tried but failed, me.
I like the people involved in the movie.
And they're all signed on to keep doing them. So I'm like, I'm really curious what the next step is. But I agree with you, we could have been a different position where you could have just kept having Fantastic Four movies rather than restarting the whole thing again. That said, I feel like there was less outrage for it because so many people seem to be down on those first two Fantastic Four movies, where I'm like, I'm indifferent, but, like, leaning on fine, because it's like they captured the family dynamic well.
Yeah, I agree.
Which seemed like a bottom line good thing to me, not the, like, that great. And even the cast, like, I think Yawan Gruffith is he's just a very boring Mr. Fantastic, and I think Jessica Alba's terrible, but I mean those other two
50% of the four was pretty good,
and Julian McMahon is just like, he's Dr. Doom as like a model, but whatever.
Yeah, well, F is for Family is a show on Netflix, which you should watch,
and it has a second season coming.
Last question that we got from listeners, for everybody here on the panel today, Justin asks us, I was watching Star Wars today with my boys yet again. What movie would you have loved to see on the big screen on its opening day or week? To see Star Wars at age 3 in 1977 would most likely have blown my mind away. So, question to you guys, what movie would you have liked to have seen when it first came out?
I mean, Star Wars or Raiders or just any of those movies of that ilk would easily be, like, good answers for that.
Yeah, the Indiana Jones movies came to mind when he asked us this question.
Like, I could say other movies that are just favorite movies of mine in general that it'd be great to see for the first time on a big screen, but, like,
Hook?
Shut up. But the kind of, like, the audience experience you get with something like those, like, I, last weekend, my girlfriend and I and some of my friends, we all went to the New Beverly, Quentin Tarantino's theater in L.A., and saw Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, like an original 35 print of it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And that was just a great audience. Like, everyone has seen that movie. Everyone knows it well enough. But, like, watching that with an audience, you know, everybody in that theater watching it with each other, there's a great, like, fun to be had. And that's, you know, Temple of Doom, arguably, you know, people argue that's maybe one of the weaker ones. It's super fun to watch. And, like, getting through, like, the traps, getting through like the big Indiana Jones moments, having that score just rising in theme as it goes. Like you get people were clapping in the theater during certain sequences, like the whole the ceiling, the collapsing ceiling with the spikes in it, and the bugs outside of that, and like Willie trying to turn the lever, and Indiana Jones trying to stop the thing from happening.
We are going to die.
Exactly, like all that. It ended, and everyone started clapping. It's just like you don't get that off. You get that now with like certain like these big superhero movies or whatnot. But like you look at these movies from your past that you really love for like various reasons, or you have a nostalgic feeling for, or you just genuinely enjoy it. I don't have any. It's not nostalgic love that makes me love Indiana Jones. I just love Indiana Jones. Those would be great to get for the first time. When I saw Star Wars, I saw Star Wars on home video when I was young for the first time. It was great to see it when they did those re-release, the special editions in theaters. I had a ball with those, but like seeing it for the first time before anyone has ever seen these movies, that'd be great. I would love that experience. Zachy, anything to add?
I would say for me, it was, the original Superman. I would love to have seen that. And, probably Planet of the Apes, like before I knew the twist.
That'd be great, right? Yeah, that's a good way to think of it. Like movies you know a twist like that, or like Soylent Green, something like that.
Yeah, like, I saw The Sixth Sense opening night before anybody was talking about it, so I didn't even know to expect a twist.
Uh-huh.
And I was just knocked out of my chair.
Oh, man.
Samesies.
Yeah, and so, you think about it. Like Planet of the Apes, at this point, however many years later, everybody knows everything about it, but to not know anything and to see that... to have that thing sneak up on you. My gosh, that'd be really something.
I managed to do that with Usuals. I didn't see Usual Suspects in theaters, but I managed to like go all the way through my life before seeing Usual Suspects and be surprised by the actual twist in that movie.
I was thinking about that too. I was like
that,
10 or
that
11.
That said, like the kind of the glass, the coffee cup breaking and the slow montage, like I've seen that before, but like I never knew what it like was. So it's like, it felt like it was a very familiar sequence of like visual events happening, but I still was like shocked by the revelation that was taking place.
Right.
Kaiser Soze is Alec Baldwin. Spoiler alert.
In a Glengarry Glen Ross. His Kaiser Soze carries around two steel balls everywhere.
How did he get those balls? He just appeared out of nowhere.
Who is Redfoot? Okay. That was feedback.
Feedback.
What's Abe?
Aaron, I think it's time for Zachy and I to go head to head in a game.
All right, let's do it. Wow.
You guys might not know this, but Aaron is actually the great, 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 great godson of John Williams.
Oh yeah, great, 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 greats in there. He's not that.
So yeah, no, he's just got a lot of great, great, great godsons.
He's not Bach. He's not from the 1800s. Hey, you have a game for us?
Am I making a game?
Yeah.
If I'm making a game, then it's gonna be a Shane Black game, and it's called Back to Black. So it's kind of like similar to the Doug Benson game that we discovered last week, in which I will name a character from a movie, and then I will go to that character's page, and on their IMDb page, there were four movies in which the IMDb has listed as they are best known for. So if you could name the name of the actor or actress, and then name the remaining three movies on their best known for on IMDb, that would be how you would play this game.
I wouldn't presume that The Nice Guys is one of the best known things on each of these actors' page.
No, I don't think that they would. It's more of a Shane Black filmography thing.
Okay.
Like actors from his.
Oh, just from his movies in general.
From his movies. Yeah.
Oh, got it.
So okay. Wait. So you name the character, and then we have to tell you what the actor who played that character, what else they're best known for.
So you'll name the actor, and then there's three other movies on their IMDb page. We couldn't figure out the logic behind IMDb. Having these movies on there.
Okay.
But you'll...
I think
you'll...
it's based off, like, search database research. Like,
it
just,
could
like,
be,
what,
but
what
it's
people
very...
are searching for most that corresponds to these actors. I think that's what it is.
All right, so here we go. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
They're going to name a character.
You got to name the actor that I'm thinking about.
Aaron?
Aaron?
Val Kilmer?
That is right.
Okay.
All right. What are the other three movies on his IMDb page?
Batman Forever?
Yeah, that is one. Okay.
Top Gun?
Uh-huh.
The Saint?
No. It's pretty close, though.
Is it Top Secret?
It's not top secret.
Is it The Doors?
It's actually Heat.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it's pretty close to The Saint, but sort of.
In that they both end with the letter T? Like, how are they similar?
Sort of came out around the same time, and they both have guns.
Both have Val Kilmer.
Yeah, they both were black.
I don't think The Saint uses guns.
He doesn't?
I don't know. I think so.
I haven't seen that movie in quite a long time.
I thought you were going to name a character from a movie, a Shane Black.
Me too. That's what I thought too.
Yeah.
I guess I will. Okay.
Try that. I think we're both good enough for that.
Okay. All right. From a Shane Black written or directed movie. Okay. Gotcha. Jack Slater.
Oh, Zachy.
Zachy.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Conan the Barbarian.
Okay.
Terminator. Predator. And Pumping Iron.
Wow, you actually got Pumping Iron. There's three of them.
Is T2 the other one?
T2 is not the other one. Total Recall is the other one.
Oh.
And so was Predator, and so was Terminator, but you had named, what was the first one that you named?
Conan.
Conan, which is not on there.
Wow, that's surprising to me.
But Pumping Iron is.
I'm surprised that Pumping Iron's there in Conan or T2 art.
I'm very glad that you got Pumping Iron, though, because...
Yeah, I'm impressed at myself for that.
Because I would not have gotten that at all. So, all right, ready for the next one?
Yep.
Here we go. Martin Riggs.
Aaron.
I heard Aaron first.
Mel Gibson.
Okay.
Okay, well, Lethal Weapon.
Okay.
I'll say The Road Warrior.
Okay.
Braveheart.
Uh-huh.
And The Passion.
Passion of the Christ?
Yeah. The other Passion.
You got two of them.
Is Braveheart one of them?
Braveheart's one of them. The other one is Lethal Weapon.
Ransom?
No. The Get Patriot. What? And Signs. The Patriot.
Oh, The Patriot.
And Signs.
Oh, yeah.
Signs. Okay.
Yeah. So right now, in terms of point totals, Aaron, you have 5-3. I've got a couple more here. Because I'm counting the number of movies that you guys get correct. Roger Murtaugh.
Zachy. Danny Glover.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to say Lethal Weapon.
Okay.
Predator 2.
Okay.
Day After Tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And Color Purple.
He's in 2012, not Day After Tomorrow.
Really? Yeah. Oh, wait.
I'll give you that.
What?
One of them, Roland Emmerich.
One of them, yeah. One of the Roland Emmerich.
What do you think of that? That's completely wrong.
I know, but the reason why I'm giving you is because it's not on there. You have Lethal Weapon, and you got The Color Purple.
That's it?
Yep. For whatever reason, they gave me Saw.
He's in Saw, that's why.
And wow. I know, but that's not one that I would be like, yeah, you know, Danny Glover. And the other one, Shooter.
Shooter.
I would not have even remembered that.
Shooter just haunts me everywhere I go.
So this will be the last one here, and I think you guys might know who it is. So, Harry Lockhart.
Aaron. Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Uh-huh.
Iron Man.
Uh-huh.
Marvel's The Avengers.
Uh-huh.
Sherlock Holmes.
Uh-huh.
That's four.
Okay. You got two of them.
Okay.
It is Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, and The Avengers.
There okay. you go.
So that's what Robert Downey Jr. is known for.
And I'm sure his bank account is grateful for that. So.
Yeah, very much so. So in the end...
At least it's not The Judge.
If it was, that'd be great. In the end, it's Aaron, you took away the game. But, I mean, overall, you guys both know your movies very, very well.
Well, thank you.
Well, we know our movies and have an idea of how IMDb tries to do their thing.
It's so strange. Because you would have thought that, okay, yeah, well, Robert Downey Jr., they'd vary it up. But no, they gave him all the Iron Man.
Because people are searching those Marvel movies.
Do you guys want to do one more, just for funsies?
Yeah, sure. Always.
Russell Crowe. And this is just for funsies, so you guys can just name the four movies that he's
Gladiator.
Known for.
Gladiator. Uh-huh. Man of Steel.
Okay.
The Insider.
Uh-huh.
I'd say Confidential.
Uh-huh. You guys are half right. So Gladiator, LA Confidential, A Beautiful Mind,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an Academy Award winning movie. And then Les Miserables.
What?
Les Mis. There it is.
Right? Right, Zachy?
For his awesome singing, no doubt.
Yeah, like this may, how does IMDb come up with best known for? So
What's his band? 50 Odd Foot of Grunt, which
yeah,
is like
something
describes
like that.
Is that really his
singing?
Band name?
Yeah.
And that describes how he sings.
Yeah.
Very much so. So that was Back to Black.
Thank you. Thank you for that game, Abe. That was fun.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
I'll insert AC/DC right there once again as well.
No. That was not AC/DC.
That's, I don't know what that was.
No.
It's okay. Let's do a little Out Now Presents What's Out. Let's do a little Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week. First up, we have Risen. That was the.
I haven't seen it. That was with Ray Fiennes.
Joseph.
Oh, Fiennes. Joseph. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Then we have The Finest Hours. I did see that.
Which also has Joseph Fiennes, right?
Yeah, was a big on that one.
No, I didn't like it either.
Let's see. How to be single.
That was in and out of movie theaters like lickety split.
Zoolander 2.
Which was also out of theaters lickety split.
I think they came out the same weekend, actually.
Did they?
Okay. I think so. Manhunter, Scream Factory Collector's Edition. This is the Michael Mann adaptation of Red Dragon, which is terrific.
As a kid, yep.
It's a terrific film, and it has a terrific Blu-ray that I'm looking forward to checking out. Brandon Peters, friend of the show, wrote a review on Why So Blue. It has a ton of stuff on there. Mm-hmm. This is something I've heard things about. 54, the director's cut. 54 is a movie from like 98 with Ryan Phillippe. And
Mike Myers.
And Mike Myers, yeah. And I believe that movie's like 90 minutes, and this director's cut adds like an hour, I think, back to the movie, and it's supposed to be like really good. That's what I've heard. So.
Wow.
Anyone that was interested in 54, there you go.
Oh.
The Player, Criterion Collection Edition. This is Robert Altman's very funny film satire with Tim Robbins in the lead, and like everybody stars in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It famously has a very long opening sequence that models after the Orson Welles film, Touch of Evil, like a very long tracking shot. But The Player, it's a very funny movie. And it's on Criterion, so there you go. Buster Keaton, The Shorts Collection, 1917 to 1923. For those that love Buster Keaton or silent movie era shorts, Kino Lorber, a Blu-ray manufacturer, has put together this awesome collection of his short films. Like I think there's like 20 short films of here from like their early 1900s. All of Buster Keaton. I'm a Buster Keaton fan. I prefer him over Charlie Chaplin. Not that it means that much. And lastly, Agent Cody Banks 1 and Agent Cody Banks Destination London make their Blu-ray debut this week.
Good job.
It's about damn time.
Yeah. Why I needed to lead off with that, why I had to bury the lead with Agent Cody Banks, I'm not sure.
Everybody loves Frankie Muniz.
But if you've been dying to get those on Blu-ray, you can now. So there you go. That was on episode that. Now, let's go to Extremely Cool. These are movies now on Netflix that I can recommend. I saw this came on there, and I think I saw this at the Newport Beach Film Festival like 2 years ago. It's called The Last Man on the Moon, maybe 3 years ago.
I haven't seen it.
It's a documentary that's about the last person that went on the moon. And I think not only did I see this movie, this documentary, but I think I even interviewed the astronaut, the last man on the moon.
Interesting.
I have to look this up. I can't recall right now. But
wait, you interviewed an astronaut?
No, the yes. But
a real astronaut.
Yes, a real astronaut. But he was the last astronaut that was, on the moon.
We've got to get that recording up.
But that's now, I recall liking the film quite a bit. I thought it was interesting. Let's see, what else? We Are Still Here. This is a horror movie that I never got to see, but I remember the poster for it, and I remember it being regarded quite well. So I might get a chance to check that one out. And if you're in a weird mood and you want to check out MTV's Scream TV series, that's now on Netflix as well.
Is that over now?
Second season starting soon, actually.
Oh, they
But it still, out. Yeah, it's still going.
All right.
So yeah, that's extremely cool. Next week's show. Next week we're talking X-Men: Apocalypse, the ninth film in the X-Men franchise.
Oh boy.
Starring Oscar Isaac as Apocalypse, and that's the plan for next week. And last thing we do here, what should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? Zachy, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
There's a documentary called Wiener about Anthony Wiener, which I think just started playing limited release a couple days ago, and it is fantastic. I mean, really, probably one of my favorite movies I've seen this year. It's such a insight into the sort of the political process and how you know, given the election season that we're in right now, it's almost like you see in you get a window into how we got to this point through the through Anthony Weiner's self-immolation.
I saw the trailer for that, actually. It looked pretty funny.
Looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good.
What do you plan to see next?
I'm seeing Alice Through the Looking Glass in a couple of days. I don't know that I'm excited about it, but I'm seeing it.
Abe?
I definitely recommend Captain America Civil War if you haven't seen it. Definitely recommend Nice Guys. And next, X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, I would recommend The Lobster, which is spread wider in the theaters.
The Lobster.
I would recommend Sing Street, which I keep recommending. And I would recommend The Nice Guys as well. That's a good trilogy of films you could check out if you get a chance to. And yeah, Alice Through the Looking Glass is the next film on the docket. We will see how that goes and probably bring it up, you know, at least mildly next week during our X-Men Apocalypse show. Big Memorial Day weekend, I guess, as far as some of these things go.
Oh, man.
And with that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out and Out There. And Abe, you can find more of my work at my personal blog, thecodeiszeke.com. You can find all my written movie reviews there. You can also find me on whysoblue.com. I actually got to interview the director of Deadpool about its 4K Blu-ray release this week, and I wrote an article that I was very happy with over there at Why So Blue. Thanks. You can also find me on Twitter at AaronsPS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff at walrusmoose.blogspot.com and twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag StuffGunnaStuff.
Zach, you have on.
Check out the new episode of the Movie Film Podcast in a couple days. And on my blog, zakiscorner.com, that's ZAKISCorner.com, I'll have my interview with Kate Beckinsale about love and friendship.
Nice.
You can find all the other episodes about Now, Theron, and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audioboom.
Listen to us over at Podomatic, HHWLOD, or SoundCloud.
Feel free to email us your thoughts on The Nice Guys or anything else we might have talked about during this week over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Write to us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
Send us any gifts or tell us how to use Tumblr on our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. Yeah. Zachy, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Zachy.
Thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure, guys.
For sure. And yeah, until next week when we just see how far these mutants have come, that's going to do it. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
It was the 3rd of September. That day I'll always remember. Yes, I will. 'Cause that was the day that my daddy died. I never got a chance to see him. Never heard nothing but bad things about him. Mama, I'm depending on you to tell me the truth. Mama just hung her head and said, son, Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
all he left us was alone. Oh, Papa was a rolling stone, my son, yeah. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
all he left us was alone.
Remember when Russell Crowe used to be like fit all the time?
You mean in the 2000s through 2005?
Pretty much, right?
Those 5 years.
It was when he really started getting into his band and started drinking more and throwing phones at people. That's when he started going a little bit more.
Well,
over.
Even like Noah, it seemed like he was getting back, and then like he let it go again. And now like the Nice Guys, like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
He's got, you know, got to build a boat. He's got to take the muscle.
True. Yeah, he's got to get muscle.
Now he's got that Yoo-hoo gut going on the Nice Guys.
That totally made me want to get a Yoo-hoo after the movie.
Well, like he gets the Yoo-hoo, and then like the next scene he has like two cases of Yoo-hoo. And then he has to drop all of them. And it was like, oh, that's sad. He bought all that Yoo-hoo.